Good evening, everyone. I just want to test if Jared, Sean, and Cooks are connected.
Hi. How's it?
Awesome. I think it sounds like we are being heard. Cooks, I think we're just waiting for you to come on into the pod as well, and then we'll start in a few moments.
Evening, guys. Can you guys hear me? Can you all you?
Yes, we can hear you loud and clear. That's great. We'll start in a few moments. Okay, let us start. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Rugby Bits Pod number 16, powered by BetCoza. We are excited to be talking rugby and a lot of international rugby this weekend to talk about as well. We are joined by the usual team. We've got Jared Cooks and Sean joining us on this particular bomb squad, and yeah, we are going to be looking through. Of course, the South Africa versus Wales test match, but we'll be looking at the other test matches that are happening over the weekend as well. And as always, we'd like to invite anyone that would like to share their thoughts, ask a question, to please just request to speak as well. We'd love to hear your thoughts. We'd love to hear what you think about some of the topics that we are discussing today. Of course, the main focus will be the South Africa versus Wales test match. We will, of course, talk about the Australia versus Scotland match because Scotland's our next opponent, and then we'll pepper in the other test matches as we go as well. But yeah, we are joined, as I said, we are joined by Jared, Sean, and Cooks. Cooks, just a quick question from my side. As we saw in the test match, just one of the almost one of the big talking points, but we saw the pitch invader coming into the field. Do you think the pitch invader could have tackled Liam Williams one on one? Because I think he was trying to do so.
Listen, I think the pitch invader just showed what a class defender he was. Sometimes it's about being in the right place, not necessarily making the hit, but making sure that you're in the right place. And the pitch invader came on the right time. I mean, it's hard to stop Liam Williams, 5 meters out. And I think what he did, I mean, that buys him a contract. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if you've seen him play for Ospreys next season.
We'll look out for the pitch invader in the United Rugby Championship in the December matches. But let's get on to some more serious topics. Yes, so this weekend the South Africans were able to win a quite a tense and a tight test match, 23-18. I'm going to start with Jared, and I think there's a bit of a sense from some Springbok fans that, happy with the win, first win in Cardiff in almost a decade. Not if you're Francois Steyn, because you only are involved in wins in Cardiff, as he said in his post-match interview. But the Springboks were probably dominant in almost all aspects of the game, except for the scoreboard, where the game almost came into a last-minute win. So, Jared, are you happy with the Bok performance, or do you think the Springboks made things a little bit hard for themselves on Saturday?
Yeah, how's it, guys, and how's it to all the listeners? Thanks for joining us. Yeah, I'm quite happy with the win. A win in Cardiff is never an easy thing, and yeah, I think Wales definitely made it difficult for us, and we did have some of our own issues going against us, and a little bit of I don't want to say rustiness because it feels like we've just come out of the rugby championship, but it did feel a little bit like that. A few executions not going the right way. But overall, a win in Cardiff is a win in Cardiff, and a Springbok win is a Springbok win, and I'll take that every day of the week. Yeah, I think our set pieces looked fantastic as they have looked the whole year, and I think if it wasn't for a few of the Welsh forwards hitting our jumpers before they came to ground, I think we would have had one or two more, really more tries. But yeah, I think Wales put up a hell of a fight, as they always do. And I think they're one of the bogey teams for South Africa. We don't always seem to put them away too easily. And yeah, it's always a fantastic test to watch. Not everyone will agree from the 2019 semi-final, but I thoroughly enjoyed that game, and Saturday's game was no different.
Thank you so much. And yeah, I think that is a good point that you make, that it is a tough place to win, and for many reasons, and I hope we'll talk about some of them also during the course of this conversation. Wales does make it tough for us. But let's look at the Springbok perspective, Cooks. In terms of the players that stood out for you, I know, we know that the man of the match was Frans Rostain, but I think he wasn't the only one that had a good performance. What do you think, Cooks?
Yeah, I think obviously Frans Rostain was man of the match, and he was phenomenal. And I just think it's just that the values that he offers for the Springboks, coming off the bench, just experience. I mean, his rugby brain is actually insane. I mean, you look at the way he comes... The way he played against the All Blacks was completely different to the way he played against Wales. And I mean, we needed someone at the back, just solid, kicked very well, solid out of the high ball, showed that he still had a bit of pace in him. Not quite as a 9 front stand, but he could still move. But I thought it was phenomenal. I think the way he brought a bit of calmness at the back there, I think especially with when you have a Pimpo in the left and Jesse Creel was not a normal wing, I thought front stand was able to bring some calmness. I thought on Saturday it was Quaka Smith's best test in a Bok jersey. I thought he was phenomenal. And I think this year, his defensive stats this year has been second to none. But what he added yesterday was something that people who've seen him in the Lions play was great with the ball in hand. He added a bit, was great to see him with the ball in hand, great to see him running with the ball. And I think if we see a lot more in that in a Springbok jersey, it's going to be... I know we've got the world best player in Peter Steph Du Toit still injured, but it's going to be hard for him to fight back for the jersey the way Quaka Smith's going along. And And I also thought Siyakolisi is at the moment he's playing himself into a World Rugby Player of the Year nomination. He's playing at such a high level at the moment. Another try-saving tackle to add to the collection this year. I mean, we find ourselves more often than not saying, is this Siyakolisi's best test of the year? No, this game is best. I mean, the consistency he's shown this year, it's been second to none. And I thought our bomb squad again was phenomenal. I thought Kitsoff, Malcolm Marks, and Vincent Koch off the bench were phenomenal. I think it's a cheat code for us. I mean, in the 46th minute, when you see Malcolm Marx arguably playing the best rugby he's played since 2017 when he was nominated for World Player of the Year, you got Kitsoff, who's arguably the best number one in the world. Vincent Koch is playing unbelievable rugby. I just think it's a cheat code to have those guys coming off the bench. And yeah, I think obviously it wasn't our greatest performance, but I think our pack again showed we got the best pack in the world. And what I love the most is that our experience came through and we're just clutch at the end and just being able to see that game off. At one stage, I feel like we'd lose it. And then once you got that try, you showed our class when you had to, score when we needed to, trust backed our systems to get the try, backed them all. And yeah, I think overall, to win in Cardiff, it's a great win. And yeah, just really, really happy to be a Bok fan at the moment.
Fantastic. I think, yeah, there were a few... shining stars that you mentioned there, and I think it all starts up front. And I think from the first half's front row to the second half as well, they transitioned well. You have in the loose chair, I think there was a great loose forward battle. We'll talk about the Welsh team in a few moments, but Kolisi and Quaka led the pack there, and of course Frans Rostain at the back. It's actually quite interesting the point that you make about him just playing differently from the way he played against the All Blacks, but it was just very... he just brings such a threat with ball in hand as well for the Springboks. He's very hard man to stop. I think I tweeted during the course of the game that he's kind of looking like a Biltong version of Matthew Bostrom. The way that he can just break tackles without any ceasing, he's really good at that. Sean, just to bring a bit more of sort of the side of the game where things did not go too well for the Springboks. And as we discussed in our opening, the Welsh did make things hard for us. But now, you know, so what are the things that maybe in terms of maybe particular Springbok players or aspects of the game plan that didn't work or things that we need to fix before the Scottish and the English games? You know, is it particular players that maybe didn't play so well? Is it particular aspects of the game that didn't work out for us?
Yeah, hi to everyone. I think the biggest thing for me, there were two big points for me. And the one was it's kind of like a discipline space for us, but it was about finishing off what we started. We got turned over a couple of times in the 22. Wales were excellent at punishing us at our errors, and I think we just need to tighten up there. And I do think, and like what Jared mentioned with regards to a little bit of rustiness, like I do feel that that is there, and I think that we will work on a few things and just fix that space, because I thought we had plenty opportunities. Like, I know we must take your points, but when Kulisi went for the corner twice in the first half, I absolutely thought it was the right decision, and we just didn't execute properly. And I think that those are tries, like any day for the books. I really do. So I think it was more a case of us executing a little bit better, a little bit more disciplined, stuff like that. The other thing, and it's not really a problem because it can be overcome, but I think everyone's got to understand with regards to Herschel Yanchis, he didn't have the best day with his boots, and I think it's a form thing. Like, his decision-making is a little bit off, and I had a chat with someone this weekend, and they were worried about his decision-making, and like, I fit that into the form space. I think he is slightly out of form, but he also played a completely different role to his in Springbok career role. A starting nine, especially for the Springboks, a starting nine and a bench nine have two completely different roles to play. And this is the time where Herschel Yanchis needs to step up. And if he's going to take over from Pfaff later, then he's got to evolve into this game. So I think those were the two things that kind of set up for me. But the main thing was about the discipline, about just being tighter and better. You know, we really could have done better and scored points earlier. And I think that's an easy thing to fix. I think that's an 18-minute problem that gets fixed next week.
Yes, thank you so much, Sean. And just to give a bit of context with stats, the Springboks did concede 14 penalties, and they had a yellow card in this game. You know, international teams usually try to aim for having around about 10 penalties in a game, so that's a few above that. And of course, they try to avoid yellow cards, and that yellow card unfortunately went to the Minister of Cakes, Oxenchair there. But it brings up a bit of a trend that we've seen from the Australian Test matches as well, where the Springboks conceded yellow cards in key moments in the game. But fortunately, at this stage, we were able to take it out of the fire in this particular game. But Cooks, I think you also had something that you wanted to bring up with regards to Herschel Yanchis' performance on Saturday.
Oh, definitely. I just think, obviously, I mean, you go on social media and you see the poor oak copying a bit of abuse, and it is tough. I mean, you look at, I think I always believe when, as fans, sometimes we don't bring context into these things. You see a guy perform, and it is a bit of a switch in roles. Like you said, he's normally been used as a finisher, and a guy comes off the bench and he brings a spark. I mean, and all he's looking to play. I mean, you remember him going for a quick tap in that last Lions test before Warner's day and kick for Poles, because he's always looking to play. He's always trying to be that spark. And the Bok number nine position is such a hard position, because it's almost a position that Pfaff has made into his own because of the way he plays. So when Pfaff's not playing, he's such a hard player to replace. I mean, if you look at someone like, when Reinhardt plays, sort of plays a different role that Pfaff plays. And so sometimes someone like Herschel Yanchis, I do feel bad for him because he cops a lot of abuse. And I do think that it's a big change in game plan. It is his first start for the Boks this year. So, yeah, I just think we should take it a little bit easier on him. And I think that he will get better. And I do hope that he does get a bit of a run, whether he gets the test starts this weekend or starts against England. And I do think he needs a little bit more time in the shirt, time in that nine shirt. I think Faf being injured could be a blessing in disguise, so we can see him and Sirana having an extended run in the jersey, even if it's just one gets one start and the other one gets two starts, or one plays 40, 50 minutes and the other plays the last 30. And hopefully we'll see that, and hopefully we'll get more time in the jersey, in this sort of the molding his game, trying to become a little bit more kicking better, and obviously adding those elements to his game.
Perfect. Jared?
Yeah, I just wanted to add on to what Sean and Cooks have said about Herschel, and that I think this tour has been, this tour, Jacques is trying to test players out and get them to develop, and Yankee starting the game against a tough opposition like Wales is a great opportunity, and it was a great opportunity for Damian Willemse as well. He's sort of throwing the guys right in the deep end with experienced heads around them to guard them through the test. And yes, Yankees is playing a different role, and he's not playing his natural game. But when Faf first came onto the scene, he wasn't playing the way he is playing now. So it's just a development step for him. And yeah, it serves us well, because what happens, God forbid, that Faf picks up an injury like Jesse Creel did in the first game of the Rugby World Cup. These years in between always seem like everyone's just talking about the next World Cup and the next World Cup, but it's just the natural cycle of rugby. And yeah, I think it's pretty much like that, that we're preparing well. And for Yankees to take over from Faf, he needs to add more layers to his game. And I think that would have been the same for Willemse. So we'd be talking about his full-on performance had he got more than half an hour and had to be forced off.
Yeah, I think the gents have summed it up quite well there. I think this is what we want from a November tour like this, and this is what we want when we say play the second choice players in the Springbok team, so that we can see how much, you know, if these players want, we want them to get these opportunities where they are playing tough test matches against the Six Nations champions, and they are playing in the rain. They are playing in Northern Hemisphere conditions, and to see them hopefully work through and hopefully thrive in those conditions as well, because we need to know that if and when a player goes down, that the second and hopefully third choice options are able to step in as well. So, you know, Herschel will learn a lot from this experience, and hopefully it will stand him in good stead for his future career as well. Sean, I see your hand.
Yes, great that you mentioned the rain, and I just want to say a hi to Matt Pierce, but I actually read a tweet of his earlier, and he asked, when was the last time that the Springboks played in rain? And it's true, we haven't really had a lot of time in the rain, and it actually came down pretty hard at one stage, I believe. So I think 2018, on your tweet, Matt, you said that it was the third test against England in Cape Town in 2018 was what you can remember. But either way, like we haven't really had a lot of time in the rain either. It didn't affect France staying, ironically, but it totally affects a lot of aspects of the game.
Yeah, and I mean, we've only been playing in the summer the past few months in South Africa, at least for the South African-based player. So especially someone like Herschel Yankees, the last time he's played in like a Cape winter game has probably been a long time ago. So I think that does give a bit of perspective to his performance, and I think it stands him in good stead, and I think it stands the Springboks in good stead. Even with, I think, Jesse Creel, to an extent, a similar conversation can be had there with his performance, to say that now we know that our second choice or third choice 9s and 14s are able to play against one of the best Tier 1 teams in the world and are able to acquit themselves relatively well. Rian Lowe, you have requested to speak. What would you like to say?
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on. We've hammered on Herschel Yankees now for a bit, but I'd like to add, Yankees is probably just Quagga Smith 4 games ago. In his first couple of games, everyone was hammering on Quagga because he wasn't Peter Steph. And now everyone's saying Yankees isn't Reinach, he isn't Faf. But it's not just Yankees having to play like those guys. The team, even Ninobe said it about Quagga, the team needs to mold around their game as well. So I'm happy to give him a few chances. He needs it. And he hasn't touched the ball in the sport for a long time. So I'm glad to see him make his mistakes now instead of a couple of years from now.
That's a fantastic point. Thank you so much, Rian. And yeah, I think you can look at the growth of someone like Quatha, or Albertus as I'm calling him now, because we should put some respect on his name. But yeah, he's grown from that first Lions test where, you know, he was dropping the high balls and Ali Price just put him under a world of pain. There's a bit of revenge on the offer for him this weekend. And now he's probably been one of our best performers the past few test matches. So hopefully this happens throughout the tour for Herschel, and we can see him spend some time in the number 9 jersey. So let's turn our attention to the performance of the Welsh team. I think as we discussed earlier, the Welsh team was quite good at putting us under pressure and was able to make us a little bit uncomfortable, as they have, I think, throughout the past few tests that we've played in the last decade or so. And I think, Cooks, I want to bring you in here about, you know, the Wales team. We just seem to have a tough time with them. Like, we are not able to maybe play convincingly. We usually lose against them. You know, they are able to frustrate us, even if they're not necessarily with all their first choice players. I mean, their first choice forwards were decimated to an extent. But yeah, Cooks, I wanted to ask you what did Wales do to frustrate our performance on Saturday?
You know, I was thinking about this today when I was supposed to be focused in meetings at work. I was thinking about Wales and Springboks, and the thing that struck me is that Wales are basically the box in the north. So when Wales and the Springboks play each other, if you think back to the World Cup semi-final, it was both sides trying to suffocate each other. It's almost both sides with the same game plans, same defensive mindset, almost trying to suffocate each other. No one's going to budge. No one refusing to budge. And Wales are sort of side that they don't get rattled by the Springboks' physicality. They don't get rattled by the box kicking to them or the box sending the bombs. They don't get rattled, and they'll send them back with interest. And I just think what Wales are able to do, I mean, I thought Ellis Jenkins was absolutely phenomenal this weekend, and he was able to make crucial steals. And Wales always seem to find a way to make crucial steals and crucial stops against the box. And you look at someone like Dan Biggar. I thought he was phenomenal on Saturday. He was consistently able to pin the box back, put us under pressure, and force us to be able to, and almost force us to a situation where we got to run it or we got to make the decision. And Wales, what I love the most is with them is I think it's their patience. It's their patience when they're playing in the Springboks, where you sort of find most sides that get suffocated by the Springboks, they find themselves trying to run out everything. Eventually, they panic. They let the scoreboard pressure take its toll. Whereas Wales is, they are so patient. They're willing to outkick the Springboks. They're willing to outpatient them. They'll suffocate us back. So I thought they were able to do that this weekend. I thought they were able to stop our mauls until the last crucial maul. I thought they defended our mauls really well, especially in the first half. Like when Sean said, when Sia went for it twice, which was the perfect call. I thought Wales were able to stop our maul. And I think the big thing is I was really surprised the win with Gareth Anscombe on the bench in the second half. I thought someone like Reece Patchell has been playing well, or Callum Sheedy, I was surprised that he didn't make the side. I thought he would have been a better option off the bench. And I thought, yeah, so I think the last 6-7 minutes where they lost their way, but I just think the ability to be patient against the Springboks is what Wales does very well against us.
I think that's a good point about calling them almost the Springboks of the North, especially maybe less so under Wayne Pivac, where they've tried to sort of expand their game a bit more, but especially under Warren Gatland, there was a bit of a unstoppable force, immovable object aspect that was happening there. And Cooks did mention Dan Biggar was one of the top performers. Jared, were there any other Welsh players that stood out for you?
Yeah, I think Cooks touched on him as well, but Ellis Jenkins was just phenomenal on Saturday. To think that he hadn't played Test rugby for 3 years and he came back and produced a performance like that is just mind-blowing. It's sort of like when we had Irvin injured for the Stormers the whole time and he didn't play any Super Rugby and would just come back and shine at Test level. I think it was the same sort of situation as that. And I even saw earlier today on Twitter that Jenkins didn't do any contact training with Wales during the week. So he came straight into that ball game with no contact training or anything like that. And he ripped a ball off Damien Dalinder, which very few players in world rugby can do. So I thought he was fantastic. I thought Aaron Wainwright had good stages. I know he dropped a ball from a restart, but I thought he equipped himself well at number eight. Not having Faletau there is a big blow for Wales, and I think he's shown up in the last two tests for them. And those were pretty much my big takeaways. Nick Tompkins, I thought, was a lot better than what he's shown in the Welsh jersey in recent times. And outside of that, lastly, I think Josh Adams had a good game, despite seeing little ball.
Thanks, Jared. Sean, actually, just a quick one, but are you a bit concerned about the form of Jonathan Davies for the Welsh? He doesn't look to be the same player he was maybe two or so years ago.
It's weird. Fox, he hasn't really been on form for a while, but when he came back on Saturday, I was shitting myself, excuse the language, but I could just see he was off the field already and everything was fine. And then he came back on the field and I had just had these visions of him and the Fox handoff, like on three players and scoring in the corner. I was getting a little nervous. But yeah, I think we think he's out of form because he's not at his absolute 100% operating level. Like he didn't do badly on Saturday, he hasn't really been doing badly. I think the fact that his form is probably shown in the fact that he wasn't selected for the Lions tour. So it's very interesting. I seem to think he's not far away from putting in a good game, and I think when he does put in a good game, it should all fall into place for him. Maybe he wants to stay or is quite happy to rather be in a 12. He's been playing at 13 quite a bit, but he was a little bit better when North was outside him. So maybe 12 is the option for him at the moment. But I do think that he is a game away from reaching like 10-15% better than what he has been recently.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I mean, players like Willis Halaholo have not been available for the Welsh. They didn't select Scott Williams. I think there's maybe something that doesn't quite work with the Tompkins-Davies combination in the midfield. And they have to maybe explore in the next few weeks what's the best, you know, configuration there for their midfield just to get to be able to get past the advantage line of a strong defence like the Springboks. So we actually have Caleb, who's also just like Rianne, a avid follower and a friend of the space. Would you like to ask or say something?
Yeah, thanks, eh? I think it's two points, maybe a two and a half. I think the first one is to touch on base with that Jonathan Davis sort of comment in terms of his form, and I'd like to phrase it that maybe he's suffering from what I've come to call in sport lately, the Ronaldinho form effect, where if you remember Ronaldinho from soccer in his world-class form, where he had Samuel Eto'o at Barcelona during that period, and I think Lionel Messi as well, where he was absolutely the best player on the planet for, I think, 2 to 3 seasons. And then he had a slight drop where he wasn't woeful, but he was operating at maybe 80 or 85-70% based on the Ronaldinho scale, but he was still better than most centers out there. And it's just a pity that everybody still measured him on that scale. And I think that's the curse of to whom much is given, much is expected. And I think Jonathan Davis and sometimes Lee Halfpenny fall into that trap because everybody remembers Fox from the 2017 Lions series in New Zealand lately and how colossal he was in that tour, and Lee Halfpenny in the 2013 Australia one. And if they're kind of not operating on that level, they seem to come under a lot of scrutiny in terms of their performances. I thought he was decent and he was solid for a man who hasn't played much rugby in the last 1 year or so. He's slowly coming back into the fold, and 13 is not an easy job to do, especially when you're dealing with Lucanio Arm and Damien Delende in that midfield. So I think he was decent. The other point I want to make, I'm not sure if this was made already, is the Jesse Creel comment in terms of he might just come down as one of the most unluckiest Springbok careers, you know, where he started to play some decent rugby and then Lucanio Arm comes in about, and if he tries to play wing, you've got Cheslin Kolbe playing 14 and he still has Boone Kosi. What do you think about his performance? Do you think he gets a second run at the wing? And is Frans Steyn the new Chuck Norris? Does he hold on until 2023, or he's just there about to keep your Fassies and your Spoon Courses and Mapimpis comfortable in the absence of Veli LaRue and him also becoming like that joker and teaching Damien Willems how to play each and every position in that backline? What are your thoughts on that? Thanks, gents.
Thanks so much, Caleb. Sean, you have your hand up.
Yeah, I just want to chat about Jesse Creel. There were two players that copped abuse. It was Jantjies and Creel. And the South Africans fans love to hate somebody. So there's always going to be one guy that they're hating on the field. And with Creel coming back, he was mostly that guy. And I don't think he had a bad game. I think there are quite a few factors in play. He is there as a utility back, so he's going to be covering fullback, but he's definitely going to be covering midfield and on the wing. And he hasn't played in forever. So he's going to be more rusty, but he's also playing on the wing, and he's playing on the right wing. And a lot of people are hating on him being there because they would rather have seen Fassie. And I don't think Fassie is going to play right wing, not now. I think the right wingers and our left wingers, I've always thought they have different roles. I think they're different players. And I think there's quite a big difference between the two, especially at the level we're playing, especially with what we want to play. And Creel's the right player for a right wing. And I just thought, I thought with him being there, he's got a lot to focus on. You know, he's trying to not mess up. He's got his first game back in ages. He wants to take his chance. He wants to show that he can cover wing because his position in the squad is maybe under threat. If you look at like a few other players that people want to bring back into the fold. And I think he did his basics right. I think he was never going to be flash or anything unless we got acres of space. But we got no space. We got no opportunities. And I thought he did his basics well. And I think that the abuse or I think the negativity towards him is probably not all justified. And with regards to Frans Steyn, I mean, I'm super happy for him to be there. I was really impressed with his play, but I'm sure one of the other guys would probably want to add value on that. But with regards to Creel, you know, I'm happy to see him start again on right wing if need be. But with Boone Corsi rejoining the squad now, he goes straight back into the 14 jumper. That's what I feel. So Creel could possibly be on the bench next week if we go 6-2. Obviously, we've got to pick between Frans Steyn or Willy LaRue starting at 15. But if Willy starts at 15, then Frans probably takes the 23 jumper. So it's a little bit up in the air at the moment, but I don't think he had a terrible, terrible game.
Thanks, Sean. Cooks, I think you want to add on the point about about Frans Steyn.
Yeah, I just think Frans Steyn at the moment, I don't know if the viewers have ever seen Moneyball. I mean, great sports movie. You know, a lot of the person in that movie called David Justice, also an older player who got signed in and caused a lot of issue when he got brought in because he's a bit older. And the general manager on the show said to David Justice that he's not signing him to be the player he used to be. He's signing him to the player that he is right now. And I think the box, the Frans Steyn they're getting now is a player that can fit in any situation the box need. They don't need 2007 Frans Steyn that was running, that could do the things you could do now, maybe play for 80 minutes. They don't need that sort of Frans Steyn. They need a Frans Steyn now. They can come in against the All Blacks when you need to up the tempo, and he comes in early in the second half, or he can come in when we play against Wales and the game is, he comes in 10 minutes in the game, it's raining, we need his boot, we need his game management, we need a bit of calmness in the back line. We've got someone in Jesse Creel who's not as experienced as wing. So what he offers is actually more than just his actual ability, even whether it's in the camp. I mean, there's great stories that come out of the podcast about how valuable Frans Steyn was in the World Cup and how valuable he still is now to the side. So I think it's such an ace up the box sleeve, and it's something the box need. Because I mean, the big thing on the box is trust, and they haven't been bringing in too many new guys, but they've got guys they trust, and the coaches trust Frans Steyn to do the job, whatever job it needs, they need to be. Whether he's going to play as the utility back in a 6-2 split, or you'll come in as at fullback, or even come in at centre if you play a 5-3 split, and there's not many players who can play in that role. And I think Frans Steyn, could he possibly go towards the next World Cup? I think he can, because he will be managed, and obviously it's great to have him back in South Africa playing for the Cheetahs again and playing here, where he'll be managed again. And some guys like Frans Steyn, the year off last year, it does have a benefit because it adds an extra year on their careers. I mean, he doesn't play rugby for a whole year, so now we get arrested Frans Steyn, arrested Dwayne Vermeulen. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Frans Steyn going towards the next World Cup.
Thanks so much. Thank you so much, Caleb, for those questions. And thank you so much, Sean and Cooks. I think that's great, really great points about Frans Steyn that I never thought 3, 4 or so years ago that I would be seriously talking about Frans Steyn being a first choice fullback or in the first choice 23 for the Springboks again. And it's just, you know, a testament to his hard work that he's been able to play well. And also he played, I mean, 60-70 minutes on Saturday, and he was able to keep up with the pace as well. So he's been more than capable playing in the team. So I think let us, if there's nothing else from the panel, you guys can, if there's anything else, you guys can let me know. But I think if there's nothing else, we can start moving on to the other test matches that happen. But if there's any other comments or questions from the people and from the listeners, please request to speak. We'd love to hear from you. And we love the questions from the listeners as well, just to see, you know, what people are thinking and the different views that they might have. So you are more than welcome to do that. And if I haven't mentioned it before, please visit the Rugby Bits website for any for any content and articles that we write about the goings on in Test rugby and in rugby at the moment. I think there'll be a lot that will happen post this match and with the build up to the Scottish match happening as well. We have actually there's a few people that are coming in, so I'm going to just add them for a little bit. I think the one thing that I'd like to quickly also add about Frans Steyn's game at the moment is the ability. I don't know, maybe it's something that's a bit more of an intangible, but he just seems so relaxed on the field right now. And I think that's a far cry to where he was maybe mentally or his demeanor in the early 2010s, where he just seemed a bit angry the whole time. And yeah, I think the reasons why are well documented, but he just seems a lot more relaxed, and he just seems to be in that stage of his career where he's just enjoying it and loving it. And I think for people that follow American sports, you can see that with someone like Tom Brady, where, you know, winning is great as well, but he's just enjoying it. And I mean, I'm not saying Frans Steyn can play until he's 45, but it seems like he'll be willing to try in the next few months. So it's really good to see that Frans Steyn is playing well, and we are getting, even if it is the latter part of his career, but we're getting, you know, some top quality Frans Steyn that we missed out on in the last few years. Akahlulwa 99, he wants to speak to us. Aka, we'd like to hear from you.
Hi guys, I just wanted to talk about our set pieces and the scrum and the maul, because I thought that was very impressive. It was quite impressive to see teams avoiding to kick out and avoid the line out because it was scared of Itzebeth and the boys. And I think I also want to mention that Itzebeth has been going under the radar in terms of performance. He's been constantly performing
very well for I don't know how long. I think this entire year, Itzebeth has been immense. I'll definitely give him a shout out for Player of the Year. And I don't know why Wales were not trying to get the ball back in the line-out, because they didn't even try to lift Adam Beard when they were attacking the mall. They just focused on that, and that led to them getting early shove-ins in the mall. And I just feel like they played themselves by that. But it is something that I want to mention, that our set pieces from the mall, the scrum, I think every scrum that we had, that we had the feed in, we won a penalty from it. So that was quite impressive as well. And yeah, I just wanted to give shout out to Elizabeth and our set pieces. That's about it.
Thank you so much. Jared, you'd like to go for that?
Yeah, okay. I think you make a great point with Elizabeth. I think he's played out of his skin this year. And I think he's one of the guys that have fallen into the category that we just expect so much from him. That, and he's producing that high standard, that for him to really stand out and get the praise that he deserves, he has to put in an unbelievable performance. But I'm 100% with you. He would not be out of place for a World Player of the Year nomination. His line-out work, I've said it before, I think only Mauro Itoje could claim to contest him at the front of a line-out. I don't think there's anyone better. And we also saw on Saturday how well he's chasing the kicks and contesting the kicks as well. We're going to get onto that Mapimpi no try later, but that's all his hard work, chasing it well and contesting well in the air. So, yeah, and his normal skills of flattening guys with ball in hand and clearing out rucks have remained the same. So I think he's in that tough space where he's playing at an unreal level, and he's doing it each week, so it sort of goes unnoticed. It's just another trademark Elizabeth game kind of thing. As for Wales not contesting our line-out, it's a difficult thing for teams to defend our set pieces, because if you try and contest the ball and Elizabeth comes down with it or Lurt comes down with it, you've lost three defenders by lifting a play in the air and you get driven back 15 meters by the box. We did it against Australia. We did it against New Zealand. It's a difficult space to be in. You either want to contest the ball or you want to stop the ball. So I think most teams were much rather take the gamble and try stop the ball than jump in the air.
Hopefully they try to do it legally in the next few weeks. Sean, I think we can... I think there was a bit of a conversation about the refereeing performance, and maybe we can sort of bring it on in this from this angle with regards to the rulings around the rolling mall, or the defence of the rolling mall by the Welsh. It seemed like the Welsh team was just consistently not getting their timing right, and it wasn't something that was really by the referee Paul Williams. So, but you know, apart from that, and you know, it was mentioned now that the try no try situation. But let's maybe start with the rolling mall situation, Sean. What do you think of how the referee was officiating that part of the game?
Yeah, the rolling mall's not a forte of mine too much, but I look back after reading up on the laws and. You know, looking at the complaints, because there are a lot of complaints from South African fans. But I totally agree. I think they infringed a few times in the first half, even though we definitely went to chat to the referee about it and we highlighted it and all that sort of stuff. It definitely changed in the second half. So, like, I definitely think the officials at halftime had a chat, had a look at some things, maybe some talking points. I'm not 100% sure how it works for them, but there was definitely a change and a conversation towards Wales, the Welsh pack about it. So overall, I think Paul Williams was not terrible. And again, like if you're reading South African Twitter, like you'd swear that we got robbed, and we didn't. There were a few things that weren't being... that a few things that every referee misses something. Like it's virtually impossible to officiate the game according to the law and get everything. And then, are we going to chat about the no try, no try later? Did you say?
Go for it. No, I think you can bring it up now.
Yeah, like I don't think it's a very long conversation. Quite simply, the ref made the right call. Players advanced, and they were pinged, and that cost us a try. It starts there a couple of places, and maybe you just need to keep Jared muted there. But it came from Reinach made a poor kick, and then because that kick landed within 10 meters, the players that were offside have to retreat. It's not about standing still. It's not about like being played onside. It's not about any of that. You have to back out of it and then approach it. And it's a safety law that has been brought in by World Rugby that they've asked that gets policed heavily, which it is. The problem is it's never cost the Springboks a try before, so everyone thinks it's new, and it's not. So the officiating was brilliant. I know Malcolm Marks advanced about 2 meters, and I believe Mostert also might have advanced. But it's irrelevant whether in play or out of play. You may not advance if the ball lands within 10 meters of you, you have to retreat. So it's a foul, and we were offsides, and it's a penalty, and it's right. But one thing I'm going to say, if you do get to look at the clip, please look at it. Jared, I'm going to throw you out of the bus here, but Jared's going to definitely do a gift drop from the weekend's games, which is like a highlight of my week. It's the best part to relive the game in gifts. But you will see Lucanio is literally pulling players back because he realizes that man's rugby IQ. I know we talk about Siya Kolisi every week playing his best game for the Springboks. Lucanio every week I look at him and I go, how much does this man know rugby? Like, it's insane. He is just incredible, and he was pulling players back. So yeah, I made a very short answer long, my apologies, but you know, that's the long and the short of it. We were offside, it cost us a try, we need to do better.
Yeah, I think I was just going to mention that whole, Lucanio pulling back the two props there, and that was just such an amazing, just a bit of awareness there, just to be able to understand the rules, to see that the kick is not going to go that far, and to be able to, you know, pull his own players back as quickly as possible. Maybe inadvertently, that almost was us sort of bringing attention to the fact that our players were advancing in a weird way. But I think just the awareness from Lucanio just shows that not only is he, you know, doing new kinds of passes and offloads, and not only can he read a defense like he reads a children's book, but he's also like reading up on the laws every week as well, which is amazing. Jared?
Yeah, I won't stay too long on this topic, but I agree with Sean. He got the right decision in the end. The one thing that I will say is that we always call for consistency from the referees, and on Saturday, I've been looking back on the game, and on Saturday, Williams penalised that exact penalty 3 times in the first half. So yeah, we get consistency there, and it wasn't just against South Africa. He got one against Wales as well. So yeah, he only noticed it in the replay of the try, but he got it 100% right, and it's one of those decisions that you could probably let it go, and if you're a South African supporter, you might moan about it if it was Wales scoring it. But at the end of the day, it's a very tough one, in the sense that it's a technical law, and he got it right, but it's one that you could let slide. But we call for the correct decisions on the day. We got the correct decision. It just went against us.
Thanks so much, Jared. So we actually have quite a few people that like to speak at this moment. So what we're going to do is we're going to just ask each person to speak in turn, and then we'll respond to all of the questions or comments all together at the end. Just for the purpose of just keeping this going, can each person that speaks try to keep it as short as possible as well, so you can give each and every other person a chance to speak. We'll start with Henny. Henny van Hansen, you can share your comment or your question.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak. I just want to speak about having some faith and trust in our coaching staff. I think they've earned it. They've earned our trust and faith. I see a lot of supporters criticizing and being negative about every decision that they make, especially when the team is announced. And I think they've earned our trust, and we should trust them because they've really got something special going here. I think this group can definitely win another World Cup for us. Yeah, thank you very much.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Eni. And I think it's a good reminder that, I mean, these coaches or this coaching staff has won the Lions series, and they did relatively well in the, or were able to beat the All Blacks in the Rugby Championship as well. So far, pretty good so far. So they've done quite well. So I think that's a good reminder for all of us to just keep some faith in them. Next, we have Ate Nkosimbane. What would you like to say? Oh, looks like he just dropped off, unfortunately. That's unfortunate bad timing there. Next, Rahul. Rahul, you're someone that usually speaks our space.
I got my one-year-old here, so just excuse that. I just wanted to ask the question about the Hamish Watch and Quagga Smith matchup this week, because I think they both had cracking matches. And also how Itzebeth has kind of stepped up in a sense that we're not missing Peter Steptoe as much as I thought, particularly with someone like Quagga as well, just pick up the slack. Yeah, that was my question.
Perfect. I'm sure the panel would love to dive into that. I think the loose trio battle between the Scots and the South Africans will be very spicy on this weekend. Then we have Rolane, who always also is a big contributor to these spaces as well. Rolane, what would you like to say?
Hi, can you hear me as usual? Okay.
Yes, we can hear you.
I think, I don't know what's speaking about the lineout issue and regarding the lineout officiating. I think when it comes to lineout officiating, it's very difficult for the referee to see every single piece of detail that comes in to play when the team when the team brings something, a new dynamic or something new, right? That's why it's so important that the captain mentions these things, like, okay, Mr. Ref, they are hitting our lifter or something like that, because it's so small that the referee doesn't pay attention, because it's common knowledge that you mustn't drive the lifter or something like that. So when it comes to certain lineup calls with regards to the mall, so that they were prepared more in sense of how to stop us, right? Because if they stopped us once or twice, but let's say with the early sack or something like that, that's where the captain Siya Kolisi has to say, listen, this is happening. I know you're not seeing it. I know you're not penalizing it now, but please look at it, because that's what the props do as well. Because sometimes the referee can't see what's happening in the scrum, so the props will tell the captain, listen, this guy's scrumming in or something like that. Then the referee will pay attention to that small piece of detail going into the lineup or whatever phase that's going in. Other than that, I just want to get your opinion on Quagga Smith, because I think Quagga Smith went so much under the radar this weekend, because he had such a phenomenal game. He played a full 80. And it's all that I think he did. You know, the honest man that does his honest trade. It's not much work, but it's honest work, if you get what I'm saying. Because I can't even remember when last that I ever pinned Quagga or say anything about Quagga, but his contributions are so immense. I think it's because we were so strict on him when he first replaced Peter Steff. I remember I myself was, I think it was Dwayne, not Peter Steff, yeah. We were also strict on him, and it takes a certain caliber type of player to recover, you know, because to recover and say, you know what, that is in the past, I will play better now. Moving forward, I'll do this better, you know. And that's where Quagga Smith, I think, hit the nail this weekend. And one more thing, with that try that was, I think there was a try that I don't know, that we didn't score, the one where I think Magazole chipped again or someone, and then Lucanio caught it. Didn't it feel a bit 2019 finally to you guys when Lucanio caught that ball? I was like, Lucanio, man, you've done this before. I was like, he's going to give it to him, because, I mean, he did it on the biggest stage. Why would he do it now, you know? But maybe something, he saw something, and I think that's why he's a player and we are like fans. And then, yeah, with regards to the trusting of the coaches, I think that's why they're being paid. Even if you don't agree with the coach, there's a reason why they select who they select. I think ultimately we think we know. That's the problem. We think we know, and we'll never know because it's easy to speak from our position. You know, these guys have to see this final details that we don't see. So, in terms of the coaching staff, I'll never argue with the coaching staff with decision making. They know what they're doing. I may dispute it, but ultimately they know what they're doing. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and thank you to everyone that was speaking there. Some really good points to tackle. The first one from Ahul about the battle between Hamish Watson versus Quagga Smith. Jared, you want to take that?
Yeah, sure. I think it's going to be a great battle with the breakdown this weekend. It just seems that way with all test matches. There's always some great loose trios out there, but I think the Scots will be throwing out a brilliant one with Jamie Ritchie and Hamish Watson against Sia and Quagga. I think our back row is quite nicely complemented with Quagga, Sia and Dwayne. I think it works a little bit better with them three than if we have Jasper in there. But I think it's going to be a massive game. Both Watson and Smith are in fantastic form. I think Jamie Ritchie is in good form, but he's too busy celebrating scrum penalties and celebrating every penalty like he won the Kolkata Cup. But he'll want to front up against the Hawks this weekend and show what he's made of. He had a great game against England during the Six Nations, and yeah, he can certainly take the fight to us. I saw Squidge before the game. He actually said that Ellis Jenkins is a far better player than Quagga Smith. So I didn't disagree with him, but I'd like to see what he has to say in his post-match report this week, because Quagga certainly stepped up this weekend. And it's normally the host nation commentators who pick the man of the match, and I think they went the wrong direction with Francois Steyn. Although he was brilliant, I think Quagga was the best Springbok on the pitch, and Hamish Watson got the man of the match in the Australia game. So it's going to be a great battle between the two of them, and I think Seal wants to get stuck into Hamish again as well from the Lions series. I don't want to go too far off topic, but Cooks is probably excited to see what Finn can actually cook up against the Hawks. But I reckon Sia will crack a rib or two on him.
Whoa, whoa, whoa! I think that's going to be a foul there, because we are contractually obliged to not speak any ill about Finn Russell. I think that's part of our rugby bits contract. I think Cooks will protest now that we've said that, Jared. I hope that he doesn't. I hope this doesn't cause any rifts between our group right now. But Cooks, you can go for just speaking about the coaches and trusting the coaching team.
Jared, I'm definitely taking it up with management. 1,000%. I think what Henny said is spot on. I think as South Africans, sometimes we are. Our mood comes and goes at the box. I remember for the Australia game, the first test, we were in panic stations. We wanted to make all these wholesale changes and we just panicked. We forget that we've got a coaching staff at the moment that's delivered a rugby championship, a British and Irish Lions tour, a World Cup. If you look at the work they've done this year alone, having won the Lions tour and still being able to create depth in our squad in a year, it's incredible, because we didn't have rugby last year. I mean, I think we forget how massive the Lions victory was, and it's a new coaching staff. Yes, I know Russ is there, but Dion Davis has been added in, new conditioning coach, and Dion Davis does not get the props he needs as a new forwards coach. I think the work he's doing with the pack, and Don Heumann as a scrum coach, the work those two are doing with the pack is phenomenal. I think our pack is playing at a very high level, and that's without Peter Steph Tutoi. And the stages, we've had injuries. Without Dwayne at a stage, we had to incorporate Quagga in the side and someone like Jasper Vista. So our coaching staff has been phenomenal. I think we arguably have the best coaching staff in the world at the moment, and you don't hear them in those debates. We hear, and I do think that they do deserve some love and a lot of trust as well. Surely by now they've proven they know what they're doing, that we don't have to keep, obviously as fans they want opinions, but we can't keep going back and forth questioning their decisions. I think they've earned their trust, and I think we're extremely lucky to have the guys we have on board.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Cooks. And we will take all these concerns to HR as well. Sean, you wanted to speak about that bit of nostalgia you had for that when Dukanyo Amo was breaking on the left there.
I totally saw it. I had it all. It was all replaying in my head. I knew how it ended. And then it didn't end the same way. But I tell you, I had a bit of a chuckle. So just from a rugby point of view, I thought that the chip wasn't on. I thought Lukanya Ahmed would have been able to do enough to draw the last man and play Makazola Mapimpi in, who would have gone in to score. But I can't question Lukanya Ahmed. The man has rugby IQ better than I could ever have for many, many years. So I'm going to just stick with him. But the only reason I have why he didn't pass it earlier and went for the chip, it's because he got ghosted on the high five after the Rugby World Cup final try. That's, I mean, the only reason that comes to mind. But yeah, like, to be fair, it wasn't the worst decision in the world. He recollected the ball. The execution of what he did there was phenomenal. I reckon he was just like, I'm going to chip and score this try myself, like, again, because the last time I gave you the ball at the best stage, the biggest stage in the world, and you just blatantly ignored me. So, I think we were moments away. And that also boils down to the discipline, because if I'm not mistaken, we conceded a penalty quite quickly after that. We just didn't get the guys in at the ruck. But, I definitely saw it. I saw the red jerseys turned into white jerseys, and I was sitting watching the World Cup final all over again. So yeah, it was a great point there.
Awesome. I think we can now start moving on to the other games that have been happening around the world. We'll start with the Scotland versus Australia game, where Scotland was able to pull off a 2-point victory, and they'll be our opponents this weekend in Murrayfield. Cooks, let's start with you, and you know, we obviously give you the floor when we go to all things Scottish, especially when we're talking about the Scottish attack. But it was quite clear to see from Sunday's game that, you know, Scotland's attack, just being centered around Finn Russell, Stuart Hogg, was able to get some line breaks through, and were able to put their attackers away, like Sam Johnson, through the gaps as well. Is there stuff from the Scotland game plan that you think can hurt the Springboks? How can the Scottish team hurt the Springboks on Saturday?
I've been waiting for this day since the 7th of August 2021, since the last British and Irish Lions Test tour, to finally speak about Finn Russell. It's been awkward for the last couple of months to bring him up when the cricket's on, when there's other times. Now I can finally get to speak about the great Finn Russell. Tyler, you asked a great question, is how can the Springboks hurt us? Finn Russell is how they can hurt us. I mean, listen, I thought, but in all seriousness, I thought that Scotland attacked really well. I mean, for about 30 minutes against Australia, they tried their hardest not to score tries. I mean, they'll get to the far midfield line and they'll knock it on and make silly errors. But one thing the Scots do well that I think that can hurt the boxes, and I said this earlier in the year when you played against the Wallabies and the All Blacks, I do think when you play against Springboks, you've got to be brave. You've got to be willing to sacrifice 10 metres to gain 40 in a couple of phases later. Because if you try and out-suffocate the Springboks, you'll find yourself in a hole. I mean, you've got to be willing to take risks. I mean, if you look at the Lions, the last Lions test, when Finn came off the bench, when the Lions, you know, had a lot more intent, they were offloading, they were creating opportunities, it sort of rocked the box. It rocked the box a bit. Obviously, the box, they're amazing scramblers and they're always able to get in trouble. But you sort of see the sides the box have lost to. I mean, if you look at the World Cup, I mean, they lost to the All Blacks. We've lost to the Lions in that first test where I thought Whedon managed the game well in the second half. And you look at the two losses to Australia and the one loss to New Zealand. Most of those sides, they both found ways to try to get around our rush defence. And those ways was by playing. The All Blacks, obviously, chip kicks, but always looking to play as well. And one thing with Scotland is they're always going to look to play. And I think someone like Finn Russell, I think his best trait, I mean, he's got about 55 great traits, but I think his best trait is the ability to see the rush and able to make split decisions in key moments. Even when if he attacks the line, like someone like Kanyam jumps off the line, he's able to make quick reads. And that's something where Scotland, I think, can hurt the Boxers. Because if you look at him against Australia, he got a few offloads away and the guys play towards that. I mean, the guys make runs, run off him. They're always waiting for the offload. It frees up someone like Stuart Hogg. And what was interesting is they finished the game. So Tala War is finally over because they finished the game with Hastings at 10 and Finn Russell at 12. So now we finally have peace. But I also think Scotland can match us up front. I mean, they've gone with the South African method in their props. They've gone with three props out of four. So that's a good way to go. I mean, if you try to match the box up front, scrum-wise, just get more South Africans in there. So I do think this weekend's game is going to be our toughest tactically in terms of, because Scotland is, you don't know what you're going to get from Scotland. You're not going to give it a go. But also the thing with Scotland, it also tends to fall apart. Finn could kick balls into the stands again. Finn could fall apart. Things cannot come off and you put 40 points on them. So that's the tricky part of Scotland. But I do think the side has evolved under Gregor Townsend. I think it's a huge test for them to see how far they've gone. And I do, they will front up physically. I mean, Hamish Watson will be a nuisance, but I do think if we're able to shut down Finn, then we make the game a lot closer. But yeah, it's going to be a very, very exciting test match.
Yeah, and just as a reminder, the last test match between these two sides in 2018, almost 3 years to the day, so the South Africans won 26-20, but it was definitely a test match where things were very close, and the Scottish team was able to to test the Springbok rush defence as much as possible. And I think I think Kutz makes a great point about the patience in the Scottish attack of being willing to, you know, wait the opportunity for a Springbok to make a rare mistake and then to capitalise on it. And having those multiple playmakers with Russell, Hogg, Chris Harris as well, they're able to just put people through the gaps there. And I'm sure they'll also use Dion Fanamarva as a almost like a crash ball player, almost like how Samuel Kerevu was used by the Wallabies in order to just get through and to get over the advantage line. So this will be a very interesting clash of styles between the Scottish and the Boks on Saturday. Jared, I'd like to bring you on, sort of just looking at this from a long-term perspective, especially, you know, considering both Australia and Scotland are almost at the same place with having a younger squad and coaches trying to build the identity of the two sides. Do you think the two sides, just on the basis of what they showed on Sunday, are on the right track to be two teams that are competing for the World Cup on 2023?
Yeah, I think so. I think the Australians are a little bit further behind on their development track than what the Wallabies are, but they're both developing fantastic attacking game plans, and it does worry me a bit that Australia, we sort of said, okay, now we're going to go past them quite easily during the Rugby Championship, and they went and beat us twice. So yeah, I think Scotland are in the same similar way, that they do attack very well, and if things are going their way, they can take us apart. I think Cooks is right in the sense that they've invested in some South African bolt-on to scrum up front, and yeah, it goes deeper than that. That we've got Peter de Villiers over that side, helping them with their scrum work. I mean, he's worked with the likes of Kitsoff, Maherba, Inakani, all of those guys. So he has some sort of inside knowledge. I know that's been quite a while since he was involved in South Africa, but he's a kind of coach that can certainly hurt us. And the Australians felt that in the pack this weekend. They did have James Slipper scrumming back on the tight end side, not his more favoured side anymore. But I do worry a bit about the Scots. But yeah, they're on the right track, that they could potentially get past that elusive World Cup quarterfinal.
Yeah, and I think if people are, if people must also remember that they are one of the members of our pool in the World Cup as well. So there'll definitely be two sides that this is a side that we need to beat, and there'll definitely be a side that will try to put themselves in contention of a World Cup, hopefully in 2023. We have some listeners I want to speak as well. Zelagazi, actually, I was going to go to you first. Same system as before. Try to keep the contribution as short as possible, and then we'll respond to everything all at once. So, Kumalo, you can go first.
Hey, guys, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Oh, okay. I'm a bit worried about the game that we're going to play against Scotland, because I watched them and I felt they were very good on in the scrums. I felt they were very good on the scrums, and we were quite dominant on Saturday. So it's not going to be the same. I think we're going to have much more contest in the scrums. So it's not going to go maybe as we are all expecting. And another thing, another dangerous thing that I saw about Scotland was definitely their attack in the back line. Stuart Hogg running off the hip, him coming on as first receiver. He was, yo, the passes that he was throwing on Sunday were just ridiculous. So I think that even when Adam Hastings came on and we had that like 10-12 access of Hastings and Finn Russell, I think the first touch of Hastings, I think they gained about close to 70 meters just running the ball. So I think that's very dangerous. I'm not too sure if we are going to be able to defend well if we make a wholesale of changes. That's why I'm not too much for this idea of making a wholesale of changes for the game on Saturday. I don't think we should undermine it. I thought Chris Harris was absolutely brilliant. He's going to test Lukanya Arm again, like he did in one of the tests for the Lions series. So I don't think it's a game that we should undermine. And Hamish Watson was absolutely fantastic. So we must be aware of the Scottish. They are a very dangerous side on a good day. Thank you.
Awesome. I think that's really good points. And we, the Scots, if people have maybe forgotten from the Six Nations, they beat the English and the French away from home for the first time in the same year since, I think, the 1930s. So they have been getting a few scalps. This is also their third win in a row against the Australians. This is the first time they've done that also, I think, ever. So they will be keen to try and build to get more scalps in the next few years. Caleb, you have come back. What would you like to say?
Yeah, well, I think it starts with Cook's favourite rugby player. I think when he came on in that third Lions series, everybody hammered Will Greenwood when he was on commentary, and he said the Lions either win it by 20 or they lose it by 20. I think basically he was basically trying to make the comparison that Finn is more like your Chris Gayle in T20 cricket. God bless his soul, he's just retired. That either he fires and you've got 12 cricketers, or he's not there and you've got just 10, right? But I think the difference here is, I think we're worried based on the fact that we lost twice to Australia. I think that was a lethargic Springbok team that emotionally got up for the Lions series, which stayed 2 weeks in quarantine and had to play an Australian team that had their tails up with the reintroduction of Quade Cooper. But on Saturday, yes, Australia played well, but it was a pretty unsettled Australian team, which had to reintroduce James O'Connor, who hadn't been in the setup. Kirtley Beale was on the bench because you can clearly see that Dave Rennie is looking for people to plug his holes. So I'm not worried about Scotland. Yes, they scrummed well, but that's against Australia, which is naturally not a great set-piece team, right? They're very good ball in hand. We struggle, let's say, assuming we struggle in the first 20 minutes on the scrum, and Bongi Bonambi, Oxenche, and Trevor Nyakane are starting, we can easily plug and play 30 minutes into that test match, Vincent Koch, Stephen Kitsoff, and Malcolm Marks. And good luck to Xander Ferguson and his band of Scotsmen trying to deal with that. You know, you still have Franco Mostert on the bench. I think the quality of the Springbok coming off the bench is what the Scotsmen will struggle with. If something happens to Stuart Hogg with them, then what? You know, then all lies on Finn, hoping that he's having a brilliant day and not against that Springbok team. You know, you can throw the ball around all you want. he had the best of the Northern Hemisphere in the Lions series in that third test, and that still didn't come up. Even New Zealand couldn't throw the ball around us this time around. We played poorly against Australia and we got punished, and it's one of those losses that I'm happy we did lose those two games. It never feels good to lose, but I think it's a good reality check for Jacques Nienaber and his team. So I'm not worried about Scotland. I think Siya Kolisi and Eben Etzebeth are pretty hungry just to show those guys again that we don't lose to a Scotland team when we're playing well. I don't think we do. And we are playing decently well. And I think we won ugly on the weekend. So we still haven't played out. For some reason, I'm convinced the Boks haven't played their best rugby of the season yet. And I'm hoping that shows up against the English or Scotland. So I'm okay with Scotland. I think we've got this one in the bag.
Thanks so much, Caleb. We have Dalton. Dalton Barker, our man from Chicago.
Yes, hello. I appreciate you guys keeping it at a similar time. We just had daylight savings time here, so I'm still able to actually come here during my lunch break. So I appreciate you guys, you know, being conscientious of your American friends over here. A quick question I had is, if you guys were Jacques or Rassi and you had total authority over the roster, who would be one player that you would insert into this Scotland test that's not Fassi? I think for me, I would love to see Joseph Dueba out there at the starting hooker. I just love his intensity and just ball carrying ability. And I just would really, really like to see him get a shot during this autumn tour. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Dalton. And then the last contributor, and then we'll go to the panel. Rolane?
I think this is supposed to be between me and Cooks, but Cooks, when you're watching the Welsh game, right, I think we all agree that Dan Baker's playing some of his best rugby, but for some reason it felt like our flankers were putting so much pressure on the fly-off. And I believe the same thing's going to happen now because we have Kwaka Smith, who's so quick out of the scrum. I think that's the one thing that we gained from Kwaka, is that his speed on to the breakdown and his speed to players is faster than the one that Peter Steph does. So I think my main thing is that how will Finn Russell tolerate the high pressure from Kwaka Smith? Because I was playing against Michael Hooper. Michael Hooper isn't really the sprint esque type of flanker that pressurizes the fly off. And other than that, I think the other thing that we have as a Springbok team, I think we have the slow poison. You know, it's like Thanos said. Like Thanos said, he's inevitable. You know, just like the Springboks are inevitable, because at the end of the day, I mean, you could see that the score or however tight the game is, you can feel that there's this form of slow poison that starts to kill the opposition down. And I think that's where the conditioning coach also needs to take his props, because as soon as the players start getting tired, I think that's when we start, like, when the gears start turning, right? And I think Spelet said as well that we really haven't geared on yet. And do you think that if we get on, because this game that we played against Wales wasn't really, we really went on seventh gear, but do you think that if you put on seventh gear, do you think that the Scots will be able to hang with us? I don't think so, but, you know, it's just my opinion. But, yeah, tell me what you think regarding that situation. Thanks.
Thank you so much. We will now just do just a quick roundup of those questions, and then we will round up the pod and then finish it from there. So I'll start with Jared. Jared, you can speak to Dalton's question about which of the Springboks, the non-regulars, you'd like to bring onto the squad for this weekend's match. And I assume tomorrow the team will be announced.
Yeah, the team is announced. I think it's 2:00 South African time. Quickly, I'd agree that Joseph Dueba would be a great shout for this game. And we spent most of the part talking up Kwaka Smith, but I think Marco van Staden would be a great addition to play against the Scottish.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point, especially with them playing a an open side and a blind side that's a little bit smaller, that is more about speed than it is about physicality and competing in the lineout. So you want maybe a more mobile loose chair to keep up with them. Cooks, Rolani asked you basically a question about how Finn Russell would be able to handle sort of the pressure, the rush defense from the Springboks, especially the pressure that usually our flanks put on the first receiver.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. Caleb, I'll get you back for that Finn Russell slander you came with. But I think Rolani, if you look back on the test against them, the Lions test, Finn Russell's greatest trait is the ability, when he gets put under pressure, he's so good in being able to make a read in terms of either you see a pass on, Lukanya might shoot out, then you quickly adjust and find a way to cross kick. So he's always, he knows how to get himself out of danger, which is scary for the opposition because you sort of get in 2 minds. You don't want to rush him too much because now you're worried because he might just pick a hole or guys will pick a line around it. Or if you sort of sit back and let him make a decision, then you're sort of giving him time to cook you. But I do think that obviously the box will put him under a lot more pressure. And I think it's going to be one of those things where the more pressure the box, the more pressure that the box put him on, the more he will try and find ways to play around it. I think you'll see a lot of chip kicks. You'll see a lot of chips over. I think that's going to be the big weapon this weekend, is the chips just behind the rush. And also you'll see some cross kicks. You'll see a lot of short little offloads as well. So he'll bring out all the tricks this weekend. So I think that's the big thing. And your biggest point, and you said if the box are firing in full gears, the pack's firing, there's not many sides that can stop the box. But yeah, just look out to how well our Finn operates under a rush defense. I think that's when he's at his best. And so it's gonna be interesting to see how he operates again this weekend. But he's definitely bringing bringing the whole bag this weekend.
Yeah, and I think we'll be looking forward to that. And yeah, we have a lot that hasn't necessarily been covered today, but I think we have really given a good review of the Springbok game and their prospects against a very good and an improving Scottish team on the weekend as well. So thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us. It's always great to do these spaces after a Springbok test, especially when it's a Springbok win. I think the mood is also a lot happier. And yeah, we appreciate your support. We appreciate you joining us tonight. I hope there's something that you've picked up or learned from this as well. So please visit the Rugby Bits website. The recording of this space will be up on it probably in the next day or so if you want to listen to it again. Visit the Rugby Bits website as well for any articles during the course of the week for this. And there's also some content that will hopefully be on the Bedcosa website as well during the course of the week about the upcoming games. Sean, Jared, and Cooks, thank you so much for your time. I'm sure we'll be trying to arrange another space as a preview to the Springbok versus Scotland match as well later in the week, which will be Cooks speaking about Finn Russell for 1 hour. I'm glad we don't have to pay someone to be our Scotland expert. But yeah, I think that'll be all for tonight. I think there's a lot to look forward to, and this will be a very interesting battle of the styles between South Africa and Scotland on Saturday. Thank you so much, Sean. Thank you so much, Jared. Thank you so much, Cooks. And thank you to all the listeners, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see
Thanks
you
so much, guys.
On Thursday.
Cheers, guys. Have a good night.
Thanks so much, guys.
Cheers, guys. Thank you again for joining.